When you think about our work here in the Public Building Service, we're all about supporting the space and facilities needs of our tenants, but doing it in the most fiscally responsible way. And we've been able to achieve some really great results over the past few years. For example, if you look at our work to reduce the federal footprint, we've been making significant progress to help agencies reduce their footprint, spend less on rent, so they could focus more on mission. You know, if you look at our work in leasing, for example, we've been trying to embrace much more competition in the process to help get the most competitive rates for our tenants and the taxpayers. If you look at underutilized property, I know that's been an important topic over the past few years. We really have had much more of a focused effort to identify our underutilized properties and to move them off the books to more productive use. And then finally, if you look at what we've been doing in terms of design and construction, we've launched a significant multi-billion dollar program. Much of it is focused on courthouse construction. We are building 9 new courthouses based on the appropriation that we got last year. So I think we've been doing terrific work in terms of meeting the space and facilities needs of our tenants, but also recognizing our stewardship role that we play.
All right, there's a lot to unpack there. Let me start at the beginning of the achievements you kind of listed there. The reduce the footprint, the freeze the footprint mission that the under the Obama administration and is obviously continuing today. How much progress have you made? Offer me some insights over the last few years. And where has been the biggest impact from that initiative?
I'm really proud of the work that we've done to help our tenants reduce their footprint, all in the name of being able to, again, focus more resources on agency mission as opposed to rent. There's a strong recognition government-wide over the past few years that the dollars that agencies spend on excess real estate has come at the expense of more mission-critical activities. So we've made significant reductions, not just here in the executive branch, but also when you look at the judiciary, they're going to be reducing their footprint by 3% by fiscal year 18. And if you look at the consolidation projects where we help agencies reduce their footprint, but also move from expensive leases into federally owned space, we're going to be saving taxpayers $76 million each year based on the projects that have already been funded. And then when you talk about the size of the footprint, it actually goes beyond the size of the footprint. It really goes to the quality of the space as well. What we're trying to do is to create more modern work environments that reflect an efficient use of space, but also allow for the type of collaboration that's required that we think is so critically important within agencies and among agencies.
When you talk about the consolidation of office space, let me pull on that string for a second. One of the things that agencies have seen is, let's take GSA for example. GSA used to have office space here at 18F in DC, used to have office space out in Fairfax, and I think there was office space in Crystal City as well. And I think everybody is here at 18F. Is that something that's happening across the government in multiple agencies? Can you give me maybe other examples of that type of consolidation?
We are seeing great examples across the government. IRS, for example, is very focused on reducing its footprint, and we've got a number of projects in support of the IRS across the country. I mentioned the courts before, and they're reducing their footprint by 3%, and we see examples across the country. And in many of these instances, you're seeing agencies that had had multiple locations consolidate into fewer locations. And the example that I like to use is the example of my former agency at FEMA, where at one point, not too long ago, they had 11 different locations here in the National Capital Region, and they've consolidated to far fewer and are saving millions of dollars each year in rent.
Is that effort been easy? Because again, you mentioned when you talk about going to federally owned buildings, and there's I'm sure we could go down a whole path of buy versus lease. That's a whole different discussion, I think. But is that been easy to find? Is there enough federally owned space to move people out of leased that people private sector owned space? Because one thing that we've seen in the DC market specifically, but I imagine across the country, is that there's a lot of commercial space that is available and the prices are definitely coming down.
We will always have a significant amount of leasing transactions to support the housing needs of our agency tenants. That having been said, we recognize that we have federal buildings that aren't always fully utilized. So when we get an agency space requirement, we look at that requirement and we ask the question, are we able to meet that space requirement using underutilized federal space before we go out onto the private market to seek a commercial lease?
Because when you talk about space utilization, it comes back to the individual employee and how much space they have per individual employee. I remember back in 2012, 2013 timeframe, that was actually a very significant story for our audience, because part of what GSA was looking to do, and I think the government more generally, OMB, was really reduce, you know, whether it was 250 to 180 square feet or whatever it was. Is that still part of the plan? How has that initiative kind of come to change the culture?
You have to remember that we're all about supporting agency mission. And in that process, we've recognized that it's not a one-size-fits-all. It's not like there's going to be one spatialization standard that we apply government-wide. But we really recognize that agency mission dictates different space requirements and facilities needs for each individual agency, and we want to be sensitive to that. That's why we thought it was really important for the agencies to define their own space utilization standard as opposed to having that dictated from a higher level.
One of the things about office space, and give me a sense from GSA's perspective, are federal employees, from GSA's perspective, again, when you work with agencies and customers, are they getting smaller spaces per employee? And has that culture changed, which occurred a couple of years ago, was a big change and people weren't happy about it? Do you feel like things have moved off that fear of the unknown, or that, hey, who moved my cheese kind of attitude?
The mindset has been evolving, and I think there's a recognition, widespread recognition, that it's not so much about the size of the footprint, but it really is about the quality of the space. And when we think about the more modernized work environments that we're seeing today, we're seeing a lot more amenities that take the form of more common space that aren't so focused on what an individual employee gets in terms of his or her office, but it really is about the overall quality of the work environment.
One of the things that we've heard time and again is this idea of hoteling and more telework and more mobility. How is GSA kind of addressing those issues as you were working with agencies on leasing and new space requirements and updating facilities and such?
I think it comes back to being able to think through every aspect of the space, and that includes technology. So when we are planning out our space projects, it's important to have the IT professionals around the table as we think through what we're trying to achieve with the space and what's technically possible with the space.
You're going to go work at the Federal City Council. Tell us about that position and what are you going to be doing for them?
I'm going to be serving as a senior advisor focusing on public-private partnerships to support infrastructure projects here in the District of Columbia. We've talked about how I'll be working for Tony Williams, who I worked for when he was mayor. I was his deputy mayor and city administrator. But you may not know that Tony Williams recruited me out of grad school 25 years ago. And we first worked in the state of Connecticut back in the early 1990s. And we have worked together in the District of Columbia. And one of the things that I most appreciate about Tony Williams is that a long time ago, he taught me about the importance of public service and the importance of strong leadership in government.
Why did you decide to make the move now? Is it just a matter of Tony Williams called you up and it was an offer you couldn't refuse? Or was it just 3 years at PBS, it was time for something new?
So I have been here for 3 years. And when you think about what we've been able to accomplish in terms of reducing the federal footprint and embracing more competition in our leasing and doing much more in terms of property utilization, I'm really proud of what we've been able to accomplish as a team. And I think it's important to allow the incoming administration an opportunity to establish its own direction in terms of the policy and program initiatives within GSA.
Norm, let me shift gears just a little bit. You mentioned it as another accomplishment is leasing, and part of that is real property more generally. We know that the Government Accountability Office put real property again on the high-risk list. Talk a little bit about the effort to get that off the high-risk list, and where are we today compared to a year ago, compared to 3 years ago when you got here?
We've been undertaking a much more meaningful portfolio management process that really looks at our assets and recognizes that we're never going to have the dollars that we need to maintain all of the assets that are currently in the portfolio, and really forces us to make some tough decisions, but smart decisions, in terms of which assets are we going to keep and reinvest for the long term versus those other assets that may be underutilized and, quite frankly, have a more productive use outside of the federal government.
One of the things that GSA has been working on around this real property is this idea of this real property management tool, asset consolidation tool. Can you give us a status of where those tools are and how they're being used?
Those tools have been developed and are available for agencies to use. It really is, the data is important, the availability of tools are important, but what's most important is that government-wide portfolio management function, where we are being able to look at each of our assets to make that thoughtful decisions in terms of which ones we keep and which ones we get rid of. And when we identify assets that are underutilized, actually moving forward to get those off the books. And I think we've got some great examples of the work that we've done here in GSA over the past few years.
And speaking of that, a couple of the areas that we've talked about is the cotton annex in Georgetown as an example. I know there was a push for the Federal Central Southwest area. What's the latest in some of those initiatives that you guys, GSA, has really been leading?
So I'm proud of the work that we've been doing on in terms of real property disposal. So when you think about the cotton annex, for example, that building had been vacant since 2007. We're now scheduled to close on that sale on April 20th. If you look beyond the District of Columbia, there are so many examples of underutilized assets that we've moved off the books. The Metro West facility in Baltimore, the Dillon Courthouse in Buffalo, the Dyer Courthouse in Miami. And one of the things I'm most proud of is the exchange that we recently completed with MIT on the Volpe complex, and that's a deal that's going to be worth about $750 million to the federal government.
I know that under the Obama administration, they had pushed for something like a civilian BRAC, as they called it, to dispose of real property, make it easier on agencies. We know that that's up to Congress to act, but from your perspective, has the disposal of real property gotten easier? Has GSA gotten better at it? And what really needs to happen? Do we still need the BRAC, or do we need legislative changes? Do you have any thoughts on what needs to happen in the future?
What we've recognized, given the results that we've seen over the past few years, is that the process actually works. It may not be the most streamlined process, but the process works. And we've seen some examples where GSA has been able to dispose of properties, far more properties than it had historically. And I think one of the things that we saw that was important was clear accountability and a clear project plan and a schedule for moving these properties off the books. And one of the things that we do on a regular basis is we look at that disposal pipeline, we look at the project plan and the schedule, and we make sure that we're tracking the plan asset by asset. And when you apply that type of discipline and rigor to the process, you're able to see some really good results.
Do you get a sense that really to make this go even faster, it's going to take legislation in Congress to act?
Well, I would point to the recently enacted real property statutes, where Congress has brought much more focus and attention to the importance of disposing of our underutilized properties across the federal government. And when you think about the GSA portfolio, we only manage about 15% of the total federal portfolio. And there are other landholding agencies as well. And I think this legislation is so critically important because it brings that high-level focus and attention and accountability for doing more with our underutilized properties across the government.
The other thing about, I think, Congress is to talk a little bit about it is the Federal Building Fund. You guys got a nice influx of money back in during the Recovery Act, and that money has really led to a lot of big changes. Do you feel like that what can be done, knowing budgets are getting tighter, what still needs to get done? What would make maybe GSA and PBS's mission maybe a little bit easier from maybe a congressional perspective, and then maybe we'll also talk just from a more of a policy perspective?
You mentioned the Federal Buildings Fund, and when you think about the original intent of that concept of the Federal Buildings Fund, it was for GSA to collect rent from our tenant agencies and to reinvest those dollars back into the federal buildings portfolio. And what we've seen recently is that GSA doesn't always have access to all of the dollars that we collect from our federal tenants. And as a result, that's taken its toll on the quality of our federal buildings and what we're able to do in terms of repairs and alterations. And I was actually visiting with the 11th Circuit, the judges in the 11th Circuit, and we heard so many different stories about needs that we see in our courthouses in terms of elevators that are failing and facades that need repair and windows that need repair. And I think we've got such a significant backlog of need across our federal portfolio, whether we're talking about courthouses or land ports of entry or other federal facilities. And it's important that we be able to address that need because it really does affect how our tenant agencies are able to execute their mission.
Let me go back to the federal building fund though, because I understand your point, but I guess if GSA is only keeping a certain portion of it, that puts GSA at a tough position many times. Have you guys talked about whether Congress or OMB or whomever or internally, what could you do or could you keep more funds? Talk about that, because that seems to be a logical way to address this backlog.
I think it's important that GSA have full access to all the dollars that we collect from our federal tenants to be able to reinvest those dollars back into the federal buildings portfolio and address some of the critical repair and alteration and maintenance and rehabilitation needs that we have across our federal portfolio of buildings. There have been past years where we've not had access to hundreds of millions of dollars of rent collections from our tenant agencies. As a result, our buildings have suffered and our tenants have suffered.
Do you get a sense that the tenants get frustrated?
Absolutely. I mentioned before how I was visiting with the judges in the 11th Circuit down in Atlanta, and they had a long list of issues that have been plaguing their courthouses, for example, elevators that had been out for months and months and months, and windows that leaked, and roofs that leaked, and systems that were in dire need of repair. And we recognize, and they recognize, that if the facilities are not working, it impacts their ability to do their job.
How does GSA decide which to get repaired first? Obviously, there's emergencies, and those get done right away, a water leak or something. But like, what's the process? Can you just talk a little bit about that?
There are a number of factors that we look at. One is the urgency of the need. So if there are life safety issues, for example, obviously we need to be able to deal with those issues first. But then there are other factors that we look at along the way, including whether we intend to retain the building for the long term or whether it is a building that is slated for disposal. That's another factor. So it really looks at that factor. It looks at the number of tenants in a building. Obviously, buildings that have much higher tenant populations, they're critically important.
When we talk about disposal of underutilized property, probably one of the biggest success stories in many ways is the old post office here in D.C. There was just a recent decision by GSA around the old post office as it refers back to the lease and President Trump. Can you offer any more details or any more insights in terms of that decision?
Our Office of General Counsel has been working closely with our contracting staff on that question. And after careful evaluation and consideration, they released their findings on this issue.
Do you feel like over the last 3 years, the Public Building Service is a different place than it was 3 years ago? And beyond this idea of, as you said, you're better at execution, you're better of understanding the needs, and you're better, you went through the success stories of whether it's leasing or underutilized properties, how is PBS different itself?
First, I think it's important to focus on impact and results. And when you think about the things that we've said are important, we're actually seeing some great results. Reducing the federal footprint, we've reduced by $25 million between fiscal year 12 and fiscal year 15. That number will go much higher when we get the final 16 numbers. We talked about the rent savings, $76 million each year in annual lease savings. You know, when you think about the work that we've done in leasing and the importance of embracing more competition, and when you look at lease costs relative to market to see how our lease rates compare to market, 71% of our transactions last year were at or below market. And we talked about property disposition and looking at our underutilized properties. we've been able to dispose of far more properties over the past 3 years than we had in the earlier years. So I'm really proud of the work that we've done. And I think when you look at those objective measures of success for the Public Building Service, I think we're all really proud of what we've been able to achieve.